There's no longer a bright line between foreign and domestic policy. Every action we take and our conduct abroad, we must take with American working families in mind. Advancing a foreign policy for the middle class demands urgent focus on our domestic economic renewal.
Last week in Joe Biden's foreign policy speech, he highlighted the need to align foreign policy with the requirements of the American middle class. This marks a big change in U.S. politics because while it follows the instincts of the America First vision of Trump, with Biden, there's going to be a lot more cohesion in its application. I think it's hard for audiences outside of the U.S. to understand how far behind the middle class there has fallen since the time of Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. Other modern democracies have seen their middle class hollow out, too, because of the forces of globalization, technological change, etc. But what many of these democracies didn't do was whittle away so much of the social safety net and in fact, banish thinking about the needs of the middle class in economic policy. So if nothing else, what Biden points to is a new direction for politics in the U.S. in the next few years. That means a new input into global politics. This isn't to say that global politics is simply driven by American politics. Rather, U.S. domestic policies are one input that can change dramatically in the course of an election. And the U.S. is big enough, and frankly, loud enough on the global stage, that this can alter the political atmosphere elsewhere. In this case, you will see Americans starting to think differently about their role in the world, even as they are busy in the domestic setting, coping with coronavirus and trying to reinvigorate their own economy. If you look a little deeper, you can see that some of the ideas that Biden mentioned in his foreign policy speech appear to echo research that was done by the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Last year, that organization produced a report called Making U.S. Foreign Policy Work Better for the Middle Class. One of the suggestions that the report makes, among other things, is that it's important for the U.S. to get away from any sort of post-Cold War thinking on foreign policy. One of the suggestions is to improve relations with close allies to build an agile and cohesive network that can effectively address the full range of diplomatic, economic, and security challenges. The report also encourages breaking down a long-standing silo between foreign policy and domestic policy. Put another way, there has to be some sort of logical through line between the economic life at home and the nation's foreign policy that the American middle class can follow and understand. But also a logic that they can derive meaning from. That's my take. The report's author, Salman Ahmed, went on an economic fact-finding tour, and in a separate earlier podcast said something that really stuck with me.
In talking to people on the ground, you realize that how much trade is a proxy also for a wider set of issues.
Sure.
So we looked at how the manufacturing industry, for example, in Ohio, has evolved over the last 50 years, and we've heard from people giving their explanations. And they talked about a lot of different factors, including the loss of just simply local ownership of businesses and competition with other U.S. states and the impact of technology and the transformation of the unions, both in terms of what some believed was inflexibility by the unions in an earlier time that drove business away, but others really worrying about the loss of collective bargaining power to press for higher wages. Mm-hmm. You go down the list and you realize that at heart, often what people were talking about was a breakdown in a social contract between government and business and labor and communities. And it's wrapped up in the trade debate to some degree because there isn't a place to have this even wider debate.
Now, when you consider how much of the modern economy is services reliant on information, you realize that this breakdown that he talks about is also what allows domestic extremism to become so popular. If you live in a community where there's no explanation why there is no way to work yourself out of poverty, you start to look for explanations elsewhere. And extremist ideologies prey on that. So these sorts of ideologies provide meaning that can, in a networked world, also create a vulnerability for a country like the U.S. or any open democracy to foreign interference. You want a safer society? Ensure that it's not one that's filled with underemployed people who are underpurposed in a way, that are hanging out online with a jaundiced view of society and of democracy and of power. They are the ones that are most likely to be lured by extremism and instrumentalized by groups, some of them foreign, that want to attack democracy. But what the CEIP report also states is that the middle class foreign policy preferences point the way toward a potential new foreign policy consensus that is not yet reflected in today's highly polarized political class. I have to say that the interviewer's voice in the podcast, the person speaking to Ahmed, sounded very familiar when I was listening to it. And it wasn't until the end that I realized that it was Jen Psaki, who is today Joe Biden's current White House press secretary and advisor. If Biden and the Democrats, and even possibly a couple Republicans, are successful in better aligning foreign policy goals with American domestic life, it could form the basis of a new era of democratic power in global politics. The prospect of U.S. foreign policy more entwined with the middle class's requirements could make for some interesting developments in the years ahead. For example, I would like to see how it interacts with the China Rise story. China is a country where the material improvements of its citizens' lives are of great concern to the government. In December, Chinese President Xi Jinping declared that the country had met its 8-year goal in reducing poverty. "We completed the task of poverty alleviation in the new era as scheduled," Xi told the Politburo Standing Committee. "Under current standards, all rural poor people have been lifted out of poverty and all poor counties have been removed." Now, while the devil is in the details with any official Chinese government statement, the intent is clear. Freedom-talking Westerners often miss how the legitimacy of any regime is tied up in the order and in the material wealth its people enjoy under a given government. With Biden talking about a middle-class-centered foreign policy, the locus of attention in the U.S. swings in this direction, too. Now we can see how there may be a broad economic path for citizens both of the U.S. and China. It's doubtful that it would merge into a competition of systems, since both are capitalist powers to a degree. But it's easy to imagine a competition of legitimacy between the U.S. and China, based on this. And that competition would be bound up, I suspect, in what the respective governments can deliver for their citizens. The last time we saw such a broad, sustained competition was during the Cold War, but that was an era when technology wasn't so disruptive for society and borders were still strong. Today, even with much of the world in varying degrees of lockdown because of coronavirus, ideas, information, perception, and intellectual property flow easily across borders. How competition will further develop between China and the U.S. can't be known at this point. There are simply too many variables, too much is in flux. But Biden himself has flagged that China can count on, quote-unquote, extreme competition from the U.S. Aligning the U.S.'s actions abroad with the requirement of its citizens at home could become a big part of a future geopolitical equation. If Biden and the Democrats genuinely shift in this direction, American democracy will likely move to a new dance in the years to come.